Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. On this show, we talk about people, places, and events. And it's important that we do so, because as we look at our history, even for those who majored in history, there are a number of subjects that do not come to the fore. And that is because they have basically been omitted. Does not mean that they have not happened. We're not inventing anything. We're not changing anything. But we are adding to the very fabric, the very history of this country, those facts that are pertinent. Many times it seems as if people deliberately leave things out of history. And to an extent, that's true. Because most of the people that we hear from are historians. They're writers. And they write those things that sell. And many times, there is an ugly side to the story. But we continually tell ourselves that in order to sell these books, we cannot expose the ugly underbelly of what's there. But we continue to tell ourselves we must understand history. We must know it in order that we don't repeat it. But if we are given inconclusive facts, if we eliminate some of the most pertinent facts, we are fooling ourselves and thinking that we are learning something. What we are doing is developing the worst habits that we could do. And this show is dedicated to removing those barriers to our understanding. And we will talk about, particularly this month, the show is open. We do have discussions. You can call in. To those of you that are listening on your devices or through your computers, God bless you, because the intent is to get information out. But we do want to hear from you. And I'm going to give you a number. The only difference between that and what you're listening on now is that if you call in, I see you on my dashboard. You can hear the program, and I have control over the microphones. I can open them. I can close them. And at some points in the show, we will open them so that you may have questions, you may have comments. I realize that everybody is not going to agree with me on every point, but I do ask that you take into consideration the remainder of the audience. And that is, if you call in on a cell phone, there is a mute button, a microphone with a line going through it. And if you touch that, we cannot hear the background noise that's going on in your home, such as the phone ringing in my house now. But we have other ambient noises that we hear, such as trains going by, trucks going by, dogs barking, kids playing, whatever. You become somewhat immune to them because they're always there. But on the air, it is something that is distracting to everyone. We also ask that you be adult, not necessarily using curse words, but treat people in a courteous manner. We do have some younger listeners, and God bless them for doing that, because they are going to grow up knowing the answers to many questions that others have not been exposed to. And to that end, I have a blog post. It's called AmazingBlackHistory.com, and we post on it weekly, except during February and March, when we post daily. In February, we post on Black history, and this year we concentrated on race riots and massacres. And why did we do that? Because many people are unaware of the fight that has taken place in this country for centuries. Ever since people were brought here against their will from Africa and other places, don't get me wrong, there are people that have come here from other places, Many times they came as indentured servants, and there have been black people that came as indentured servants. It is a complete mishmash of everything that you can imagine. But by not giving the full accounting, not telling the full story, we have many people that are going about feeling a sense of guilt that they don't deserve. And what do I mean by that? When we look at statistics, we find that at most 6% of the white people in America owned slaves, at most. And many of them had very small numbers. When we come to those people that became filthy rich, they owned many, many slaves. And the number of those people is less than 2%. In some estimates, less than 1%. But they were responsible for over half of the entire export market of the United States, which was the leading industries. Slaves accounted for over 50% of the entire wealth of America, and this included the factories and railroads in the North. But we don't talk about what feels good to us. We often look at medicine, and I don't have a problem with shots. I have a friend that does have a problem with shots. I can understand his reasoning for it. He is lost a hand, and during that time it was very painful. It resulted from an electrical shock. It killed a close relative. But he is terrified at the sight of needles. I have had needles, and I can't say that they're my favorite thing to get, but I've even had them in my eyeball. I'm not trying to gross anybody out. But many times how we look at a situation determines how we react. Now, if I don't know that this has ever happened, I am understandably not an expert in every subject. Many of us are not, although there are many people that we know that think that they know everything about everything that there is to know. And that is a dangerous situation to be in, my friends, dangerous, because not only can it hurt you, it can hurt them. I was fortunate enough last night to attend a meeting, and at the table with me was a gentleman that had suffered a stroke. What does this have to do with Black history? It has something to do with it because conditions such as that affect Black people more than other people. Now, white people may be wondering, why am I listening to this? Because in America, we are a team. We are a multicultural team. And when we put down members of our team, we don't get the best that we have to offer. Neither one of us do. None of us do. Because we are not aware of the strengths and weaknesses of anybody. A good team focuses on that. They understand that various players have what they bring to the game. This is why we see substitutions in many of our sports, because they may bring in someone that has a strength here or there or wherever it may be. And they can take advantage of that. Sometimes it's a complete surprise to somebody else when we have a person do something that is completely unexpected. But what we have in our situation here is just that. We're focusing on Black women. Black women this month, 31 amazing women that we should all know, because they have contributed. They have been a part of the fabric of this country. And when I grew up with information that basically says I didn't do anything, I don't count for anything except picking cotton. That wasn't me. That wasn't what my neighborhood was all about. But there were many, many unanswered questions And when I got into discussions, even though I didn't agree with it, I didn't have any ammunition to fight with. I didn't know many people that I could refer back to that had accomplished things. We had Negro History Week that shows you how long ago it was. And it came up to a discussion of George Washington Carver every year. Not that he was not a great person, but most people still underestimate what he did. When it comes to women, we often overlook them completely. We overlook them from the standpoint of being women. We overlook them from the standpoint of being black. There are people, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that have been outstanding in what they have done. As I sit here, I am in relative comfort because I am in my home. The home is heated, air conditioning in the summer. And what does that have to do with black history? Black women's history at that? Because one of the people I'm going to talk about is Alice H. Parker. Alice H. Parker, who developed the gas furnace. And what did that do for us? Well, for one thing, it allowed for a central heating system. If you are old enough, and some of you don't have to be very old to remember this, we heated many of our homes with wood or coal, and we had stoves, and we had stoves in individual rooms. And sometimes everybody would sit in the living room because that's where the big stove was. And when you went into your bedroom, you almost froze to death because you didn't have heat in there. Some people were fortunate enough that they had fireplaces in many different rooms. But it's a cumbersome situation when you are talking about large buildings, multi-story buildings. Can you imagine living on the 50th floor and having to take coal or wood up and ashes down? It's cumbersome. But she developed a system that allowed forced air to be moved into various rooms and eliminated those dangerous stoves. Dangerous because if you fell against them, you were definitely going to be hurt. And also, there was a danger of fire from those stoves. We built them as best we could, used the best materials we could afford, and sometimes that was a problem because when you're talking about people that don't have tons and tons of money, sometimes things get left out. You don't get the best. And so we've lost many lives due to that. So Alice H. Parker did that. When it gets hot this summer and we have our air conditioning, while she didn't invent air conditioning, she developed a system that allowed it to be moved through our houses. Alice H. Parker is one of these women that we should all know. I want to talk to you about today's post, and it is a particularly brutal case, but we look at people, places, and events. And if we don't look at all sides of this problem, if we don't look at all parts of the scenario, we are leaving out valuable information. Sometimes it's painful to hear. Sometimes it's painful to even think about it. And Mary Turner is one of those people. Mary Turner. Why don't we know that name? Because it was a very brutal situation, inhumane. The fact that human beings can take this type of action against another human being, settling, it is unsettling. At this point, I want you to take a couple of minutes. If you have some very young children that may be upset, you may want to have them do something else for a few minutes as I talk about the case of Mary Turner. Mary Turner is very significant to me because as she went through the ordeal that she went through or that she was put into. It is horrible, absolutely horrible. Here's what happened. Mary Turner's husband, I believe his first name was Hazel. And sometimes when we hear these names, we sometimes think that they are gender specific. But in times past, these names were not that were not used in that fashion. There are many slaves whose men whose name is April, because they were born in the month of April. We have Vivian Thomas. Mother thought that he was going to be a girl, so she named him, had picked out the name Vivian. Charlotte, who is one of the founders of Prescott, Arizona. Many of you may call it Prescott, and even within the town, there's discussion of whether it's Prescott or Prescott. In the early days, it was Prescott, still spelled the same way. But what happened is Mary Turner's husband, and we talked last month about race riots and massacres and things that took place. Mobs would come along. We pride ourselves on liberty and justice for all as if it is a reality. It is not. And as we look at our daily news every day, we see that it is not. And what happened is a mob came along and murdered her husband because of a false accusation against him. Mary was incensed, as I would be, as you would be, as anybody hearing this would be. And she said, I am going to find out who did this and hold you responsible. This is a black lady who said this to a mob of white people. That did not fly in those days, because you don't get a trial. You don't get a jury of your peers. And even that is skewed, because what we have done is we have denied women the right to vote. We've denied blacks the right to vote. And it's only been fairly recently, with the passing of the 19th Amendment, that women and black women got the opportunity to even vote. So we were not on juries. All white juries have no problem finding black people guilty. And we are finding today that many people are being freed after 20, 30 years of false imprisonment because of misconduct on the part of our judicial system. But let's get back to Mary Turner. She said, he is not guilty. I'm going to find out why. So what did the mob do? They lynched her. We're not talking about an ordinary lynching. Now, when we talk about lynching, there are oftentimes hundreds, even thousands of people that witness this. Mary Turner was hung upside down, doused with gasoline and oil, and set afire while she's still alive. Mary Turner is alive, hanging upside down and being set on fire, yelling, screaming, doing everything she can to try to save herself. And did I mention that she was 9 months pregnant, almost ready to deliver her child? And while she is upside down in torture, burning, being burned to death, somebody comes up and opens her abdomen, and the baby falls out. And what do? They stomp the baby to death. Anybody. Now, we claim ourselves to be a Christian nation, but we justify this with the Bible. I'm Christian, but had I not been born and raised that way and were coming from some other religion, there's a distinct possibility that I would not be. Because of what I see every day, Mary Turner is one of those cases that is hard to talk about, no matter whether you're black, white, or any other yellow, red, brown, whatever artificial determinants we use to determine what we call race. I'm wrong. So Mary Turner suffered. And we don't want to talk about that. So what do? We just don't put it in the book. Is it in a book? Yeah, it's in a book. That's where I got it. And I got videos, and I've got books that lead you to those types of events. There's a program coming on MSNBC tonight, I believe, at 10 o'clock. And it's talking about Loudoun County in Georgia, where people struggled to vote. It still exists. But Mary Turner is one of those people that suffered as a result of the injustice of our justice system. We've talked about Alice Parker, and what she has done to contribute to what we do. Now, there are, at this point, 26 posts on this particular site, because I want you to be able to look back at all of these people and see that we have indeed accomplished much. And so we continue to look back at some of the people that have played a significant role. We talk about Nichelle Nichols. Many of us remember her from television as Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek. But she had many, many talents. She was a singer. She was a dancer. And she was going back to her other love, and Dr. Martin Luther King talked her out of it. Why? Because she was a role model. How effective was she? She recruited Mae Jemison, Dr. Mae Jemison, the first black female in space. It was effective. This is why it's necessary that we know who we are, who we came from. To those that are not black, it allows you to see that indeed we have done things. Because my interest in black history started with a black woman. I was in California. I never in my wildest dreams expected to find black people in California. I know today they're all over. You can find them in Montana. You can find them in the Dakotas. You can find them everywhere. We've been there. But in many cases, we were run out, exiled. And why is this so significant? Because my history books basically said that, or insinuated that, all black people were in the South picking cotton. Now, this is in the 1850s. Nancy Monroe Gooch and her family were in California. And I asked if there were any significant people of significance that played a part in what went on in California. In this particular place, I was at Sutter's Mill in Coloma, in El Dorado County, in California. And I learned that there was a family there. In fact, there was an entire community there that was prosperous. The Gooch family had hundreds of acres of land. They had planted it in fruit, and they were selling fruit wholesale all over the state of California. The 1850s, I learned that the family was buried in the city cemetery. And that struck me as very strange, very odd. And it did so because in my hometown of Spartanburg, South Carolina, in the 1960s, they didn't even put the obituary of a black person on the obituary page. It was what I call filler. Generally no more than a couple of sentences, and they were stuck in places all over the page. If you wanted to find out who had passed, you had to look through every page of the paper, except the front page. They weren't going to put that on the front page. But every page of the paper, looking for a little hole where some article may be in there. And this was, in my mind, an absolute shame. Nobody knew that there were certain funeral homes that took black bodies, others white. And while a black funeral home would take care of a white person, a white funeral home would not. And so 100 years beforehand, here were people living as people not as some second class, third class, whatever citizen in this country. Nancy Monroe Gooch got me interested. When I asked what happened to the family, I was told there were no heirs. But I've talked to them. I've talked to them within this month, and I am very impressed with that. So we need to be aware of the history. Those of you that may have watched CBS Mornings may have seen Don Bassiano talking about that land. And I was so proud because she's on my in my phone, and I text her frequently. So we are making progress. But Nichelle Nichols was a role model. We see that people played so many games. That show almost did not make it on the air because the producers of that show said, no, black woman can't be a lieutenant on the spaceship Enterprise. That ain't going to happen. Gene Roddenberry said, well, when will it happen? That's 200-300 years down the road. So the show took place in the 23rd century. That's why it couldn't happen today. It had to be hundreds of years into the future before that would happen. But she was that role model. Many people don't realize that a classmate of hers accompanied, they accompanied each other to auditions. That person, Florence on the Jeffersons, they were classmates. That shows the strength that is developed when people have someone that they can depend on. Doesn't have to be much. The more, the better. But we oftentimes don't see ourselves in roles because the only thing that we have been on is a mammy somewhere or some servant somewhere. Although there are roles that are not written as race-specific, we sometimes treat them that way. And what does that do? That leaves many of us, black, white, red, yellow, brown, thinking we don't matter. We don't matter. But we see Nichelle Nichols. Her ashes have been deployed to deep space, and she is truly a role model. Now we look back at another person, Diane Nash. There is a post on called Diane Nash, Who the Hell Was She? She was a very effective civil rights worker. Extremely effective, but she stayed in the shadows. She was not the person that we saw on TV. And in those days, many times, there were effective black women basically leading organizations, but they could not be in the forefront because of gender bias. Woman can't do that. Yes, a woman can. And I want to tell you that they can from everything we've talked about. When I spoke last of Dr. Alexa Kennedy, she was the first black female pediatric neurosurgeon working on the brain and nervous system of young people, discouraged at every turn that she made. And so many of us allow ourselves to be deterred. And what does that do? That's not good for anybody. Because as we look at Moderna, for example, that vaccine for COVID was developed by Kazmikia Corbett, Dr. Kazmikia Corbett, who is now on the faculty of Harvard University. Great mind that would have been at waste had it not been for her persistence, her willingness to endure. As we move on with our medical situation, we talk about Henrietta Lacks. Henrietta Lacks was an amazing woman because she contributed cells that made much science possible. They found that her cells continued to live. They could reproduce them, and they could use them in many experiments. But they didn't ask her or get her permission to use these cells. They didn't even tell the family about it. And it developed into a billion-dollar enterprise selling the cells of this black lady who had ultimately passed away. But there was no financial remuneration, no recognition of the family. And it was much later when they started looking at other family members to see if they had that trait that they even found out about it. Now, there are people making millions and billions of dollars with a B, and the family's getting nothing. When we look at the polio vaccine from many years ago, that was only possible because the only cells that would survive through the entire experiment were those of Henrietta Lacks. They are called HeLa cells, H-E-L-A. The way of naming them was to take the first two letters of the first name and the first two letters of the last name. There was a fictitious account put out that a lady by the name of Helen Lane or something had donated the cells, but that was a lie. So her, Henrietta Lacks, is responsible for, in many ways, the cure of polio. She was not the doctor that did anything, but there certainly was. And in any other situation, people would have been able to benefit from their donations to science. In this case, it wasn't. And the Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is a book, it's a movie, and you should watch it. When people do things that are significant, they should be recognized. They should be recognized for what they have done. So we have this amazing woman who has contributed. Now, as I continue on, I want to make sure that you have the number that you can call in should you have questions, comments, or what have you about the program. And that number is 646-668-8217. I'll give it again, but I'll give it later in the program in case you do. Like I said, the only benefit of doing that is you can ask questions, you can make comments, you can make suggestions. And when we finish this month's 31-day series, I am asking that you guys contact me with other ideas of people that we may, people, places, or events that we may want to cover. Some of you are familiar with events that I am not, because I'm basically a one-man show. I do the research, I do the writing, I do the everything else that is necessary. And I do encourage you, when you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, we have links that take you to Amazon. Many of you already shop Amazon. But what I'm asking you to do is to use one of our links. And why? Because Amazon has said we will give you a small percentage of what people purchase without cost to them for driving traffic to us. So you may see a link for a wheelchair or a cardio monitor, which we see on TV. You can go there. You can purchase that particular item, but you don't have to. You do not have to, because if there is something in your cart when you use that, and let's say you're looking for toilet tissue, simply click the cart, remove that item, and shop to your heart's content. We both benefit, because the small royalty, and it is small, comes from Amazon. But what I wanted to do is get the information out. I want to do that, but it takes some support in order to do it. We appreciate your support. There are other partners that we have, and we're continuing to work on others to support our mission. I hope that you agree with us. I hope that you circulate the information, and we are able to make an impact. We are seeing, for example, in Florida, and I'm sure that it's going to follow, that they are trying to take black history out of the school. What black history is there in there? There ain't a tinker's worth of stuff in there now. And I'm giving you information. I did this last year. There is a link to last year's 31 days of women. So we're talking about 60-plus women here that we should all know, but we don't. Some of you are driving around now using your GPS, thanks to Dr. Gladys West, who developed the idea and concept. We are putting people into space thanks to the hidden figures. Our Navy has their own hidden figure. And that is one of the posts that I put in, and I think that's Murgatroyd. Her last name is Murgatroyd. And she revolutionized the Navy, revolutionized it, basically by herself. And I want you to read that post. Melissa. Is it Melissa? I don't know, and I'm not going to stop to look it up. It's easy enough to do so. But Henrietta Lacks is that person that made things possible. At one time, the Russians said, we have been able to do this, and we didn't have her cells, but her cells are so prolific that they had contaminated the samples in Russia. All over the world, they are using HeLa cells. Remarkable. But they have cut people out of recognition, cut them out financially. And again, they're making billions of dollars while people that contributed to it are starving to death. No recognition, no significant jobs, no nothing. And they are available. Let's talk about another person that faced a lot of discouragement as they pursued it. And we're talking about Hazel Brown Johnson. Let me make sure I didn't get her name. Hazel Johnson Brown. And she was the first black female general in the United States Army. She was around a nursing, and a white nurse encouraged her to take up nursing. But it was difficult to do so because most schools would not accept nursing students, not if you were black. What does that have to do with it? You're saving lives. Does a life have a color to it? No, it does not. The soul doesn't have a color. The wrapping that we have here on earth is. But there are people that have saved countless lives regardless of what they look like on the outside. At one time, you didn't see male nurses, some of the best. But we have dedicated people, men, women, whatever, who are dedicated to the saving of lives. Why not allow them to do so? We're now finding that we're burning them out because we're working them so hard with the COVID and other things that are taking place. We have a virus that's coming through. And sometimes it's because we are knuckleheads. We have an illness. The doctor gives us a full regimen of medicine to take. And as soon as we feel a little bit better, we quit. And what does that do? That allows the most virulent strains of the virus or bacteria to take hold. And so we get to the point where that isn't effective anymore because it survived that and it's reproduced itself. But Hazel Johnson became the first black female general in the United States Army, pursuing her career. And when we look at her, there is a series of videos that talk about various stages of her life. Well, she is talking about it. Go to AmazingBlackHistory.com and look up Hazel Johnson Brown. You'll be amazed. And I don't just give you a summary, although the summary is probably a lot more than most people know, but they're videos, they're books, so that you can delve deeper. The intent is to allow you to do so. We have white people that could be inspired by the fact that a black person was able to do this. The important thing is that we understand that we have all contributed. My primary mission was to make sure that we could inspire and motivate people. But every time we did, and every time I looked at the examples, not that they were bad, but I never saw myself represented. Never saw myself represented. When I look at, Leonidas Berry, I believe is his name, performed the first transplant, kidney transplant, between two people who weren't identical twins. We have people. We have Dr. Ford in Denver, Colorado. Her house is now moved and serves as the American West Museum, or what is commonly called the Black Cowboy Museum. The first black doctor in the state of Colorado. It was not like you were welcomed, but she learned many languages because she wanted to be able to talk to the people in their language. This is what medicine is about, in my opinion. Learning to talk with people, learning to relate to people. And that's an important part of it. And realize that anytime you are in a medical situation, you are a team, you and the doctor. The doctor has specialized knowledge, but you also have specialized knowledge. You know what you are about. Now, one of the people that I want to talk about is Mary W. Jackson. Name may be familiar because she was one of the hidden figures. We saw the movie with Katherine Johnson, and there was a great deal dependent upon these human computers. They were black mathematicians, and they were good at what they did. But can you imagine if they had been locked out of the system? Because we see the advances that they made. When John Glenn went into space, he said, I don't trust that computer. You have what he called then the girls check the numbers. In other words, have them black women check the numbers. And if they say it's okay, I'm going. If they don't, I'm not going. This is how important and how good they were. Yet when they were at Langley, they couldn't even use the bathroom in the building where they were. Couldn't even use the bathroom. What do we have to thank for that? Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson, a Southerner, and not all Southerners are bad, but many of them that we know about are. Woodrow Wilson fired any black that was in a supervisory position. Not because they couldn't do the job, because he didn't think blacks should be in supervisory positions. He came through and put petitions in rooms where people had been working peacefully before, separating black from white, separated bathrooms. And in the case of Langley, they didn't have a bathroom for black women in the building where they were working. Here are adult women saying, excuse me, I have to go down the block to use the bathroom. It's sinful what we have done. But if we don't realize that we have done this, let me tell you what uncomfortable is, because we've got women, and particular in the case of Florida, we can't talk about anything that makes anybody feel uncomfortable. When I was in California and found out that I had been lied to, lied by omission, in knowing the history of even my people, that is embarrassing, folks. I had a college degree. I was working in the nuclear reprocessing fuels business, and I thought that I was educated. I felt like a fool, an absolute fool. And there are people today that don't have anything to show for the abilities that they could exhibit and have contributed. If we only look past the skin, the hair texture, and looked at the mind and looked at the soul of people, this is why this is so important. Mary W. Jackson is one of those people. She was featured on day 20. I'm going backwards on many of the cases that we talked about. And we talk about Callie House, who was day 19. And she formed an organization to fight for reparations. Oh, bad word, bad word. Because slaves worked for years, their entire life. They were deprived of pay. They couldn't own a piece of dirt. They couldn't own a piece of land where they could grow their own food, where they could have their own house, where they could have something they could call their own. And as I'm reading the story of Lawrence Kane in South Carolina, and this is an interesting story because Lawrence Kane's relatives had been told that they got their complexion from their Native American ancestors. Wasn't no American Native American ancestors. The man was black. The man was black. But we worked all these years for nothing. And then when Reconstruction came, we had nothing. We were working as sharecroppers. And there were women working alongside the men, hard, long hours, and nothing to show for it. And we talk about Callie House. A guy came through selling brochures on reparations. She said, we can do that. We don't need this guy coming through selling these things. We can do it ourselves. She built up an organization of hundreds of thousands of people. And the federal government intervened and said, no, you can't even use the mail anymore. You cannot use the mail service. You cannot cash any checks that came through the system because she was effective, because she was doing good. And this didn't completely derail her. But I want you to read the story of Callie House. Read the story of what this woman had done. Now, many times we confuse intellect and education. We confuse intellect and education. Intellect is being able to use your mind to come up with solutions to problems. And what's the difference in education? Education shows that you have gone through a regimen of discipline to complete the requirements set by someone else. That's good. Yes, but we often look at the other. If you don't have the letters, then you're not smart. That's not true. In this country, the United States of America, we have billionaires without a high school diploma. I'm not telling anybody to drop out of school. No, I think you need the discipline. We need more discipline. And this is why, another reason that we put these stories together, is so that you can look back and see that we are capable of doing everything. Callie House didn't have a bunch of degrees behind her name. She didn't do everything by herself, but she sought the advice and counsel of people who were able to help us. Can you do that? Yes, you can do that, and you need to do that. We need to pass this down to our children. There was a question on one of the programs the other day about music. We see young kids who are able to repeat the words from any and every song you can ever think of, and sometimes it's not a song that we really want them to learn. And so we're wringing our hands. What can we do? As if there is nothing that we can do. We have found something that stimulates their mind, that gets them interested. We can use that technique. And it has been used successfully. There are songs right now, I don't care how old you are, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, that you learned as a child. Why not use that as an effective learning tool now? We sometimes get ideas when we look back at these situations. Callie House certainly didn't let that get in her way, and neither should you. we are able to move forward. Forward is not a speed. Forward is a direction. Sometimes we can move fast. Sometimes we can move slow. Sometimes we can move slow. Sometimes we can move fast. Sometimes within the same day. But we have to be focused. We have to keep our eye on the prize and work towards it. And so we look at Kelly House, an exceptional woman, and see that, yes, indeed, she was a force to be reckoned with. C-A-L-L-I-E-H-O-U-S-E is her name. And we look back, and we see Gloria Jean Watkins. Most people do not know her by that name, but she was a prolific writer. She went by the name of Bell Hooks, B-E-L-L-H-O-O-K-S, all lowercase. Why? Because she didn't want to focus on herself. She wanted the focus to be on her writing. And she named it after her grandmother, who was a very feisty, quick-witted woman. And we have lots of them out there. It's just the direction that we sometimes take. Sometimes we use that sharp wit to cut people down instead of using that sharp wit to build ourselves and others up. I want you to look at Bell Hooks. And there's a link to some of the books that she has written. They cause us to look inside of ourselves, to be reflective on who we are and what we are, what we're capable of doing. And we're capable of so much more, folks, of so much more. We look for excuses why we can't. Now, we've talked about some remarkable women here, remarkable women here. I continue to think about Constance Baker Motley, who did not get her due, in my opinion. Constance Baker Motley was a lawyer. Constance Baker Motley was the one that wrote the initial brief for Brown v. Board. Brown v. Board overturned the Plessy v. Ferguson. Plessy v. Ferguson was a case that said separate but equal is okay. It was always separate but never equal. And let me mention something when I talk about Plessy v. Ferguson. There are still debates going as to whether that's the most stupid decision to ever come out of the Supreme Court. And that's saying something now, looking at what we've got going now. But there is another organization called Plessy and Ferguson. These are the descendants of both Plessy and Ferguson, the judge that made the ruling that is on the case, Plessy v. Ferguson. When I look at white people, I used to look at them as basically an enemy because we were on opposite sides of the table. But that's not necessarily true. And let me explain this because this is very, very, very important. Not all people are like that. Even during the days of slavery, there were pockets within the South that did not believe in enslavement of people, of human beings. Yes, there were some people in the North that believed in it. We see everything as a homogenous group, and it's not so. And there were people, although the primary actors in the Underground Railroad were black, there were white people that willingly did so. And they were putting their lives and their financial futures in their trust that they were doing something right. There were people that were killed for helping people escape slavery, escape bondage, so that they could live the American dream. And yes, there are others. Right now, I heard a discussion or a speech last night by an individual that talked about this so much. We shouldn't have an election day, election month. Because when we look at why do we vote on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November? Because it was convenient for white people to go then. It was an agricultural society, and most people were selling their wares on the weekend. This gave them a time to go home and to travel to the polling sites. No consideration was given to black people because they didn't have a day off. And now when we have something like Souls to the Polls, where people can go to church and then go vote, you want to kill that. Kill it. Is that the spirit that influences America? In my opinion, no. Your opinion may vary. But that is the case. Read Bell Hooks. She is a thought-provoking person. One of my favorites. We often blame failure on a circumstance. If only I had had this. If only I had had, and we talk ourselves out of success. Haben Girma. Her parents were from Ethiopia and Eritrea. Eritrea is the country next to Ethiopia. Her parents come directly from the continent of Africa, and they made it over here. And Haben Girma was afflicted with being legally deaf. She cannot hear legally. There are some sounds that she can hear, and they're in an upper register. But she became very successful. She graduated from, I believe it was Portland State College, with honors, went on to Harvard Law School and graduated Harvard Law School. And did I tell you that she is also blind? She can't hear. She can't see. Now, I have videos of her on the site. When you go to Haben, H-A-B-E-N, Girma, G-I-R-M-A, on AmazingBlackHistory.com, you will hear her speak. She is not mute. Mute means you cannot speak. In the old days, they used to call it dumb, and that used to just rankle me to no end because they're not dumb. They're smart. They just don't have all of the senses. But people get around these barriers, and when they do so, they find that the world is their oyster. And if we would use a tenth of the determination that they used, what a wonderful world this would be. What a wonderful, wonderful world this would be. When you hear a voice, it's in a high register. And the reason for that is she can only hear in those higher registers. So she has adapted. Many of us adapt to what we're doing. I have a grandson. He's in, I believe, California this week, speaking to some people. He is confined to a wheelchair, but he is not cut out of life. He is not cut out of life. He still enjoys a wonderful life, and I am inspired by him. Do I want to be in a chair? No, I don't. But I don't have to be him in order to be inspired by him. This is why we can take a black woman, a black man, just as we can a white woman or white man or Native American or an Asian or Hispanic or anything else and be inspired by them. To those white people that say, I can't find anything of value in that race and I don't want to learn about it, you are cheating yourself and in turn cheating everybody else. Because once you find that flame and light it, you can't be stopped. You can be slowed down, but you cannot be stopped. Haben Girma is a personal favorite of mine because she did not allow herself to be sidelined. Let's look at a case here in South Carolina. Sarah Mae Fleming. Sarah Mae Fleming was in Columbia, South Carolina. And like so many others, was denied a seat on the bus. And it's more than just standing up for somebody because there was no discount for sitting in the back of the bus diesel fumes and everything else tended to accumulate. If you had to give up your seat, you didn't get a discount or a refund. No, you're just treated as garbage, so to speak. Sarah Mae Fleming got on the bus. She's sitting there. And understand, when a white person gets on the bus and says, I want that seat, four people may have to get up. Because not only could you not sit beside a person, you couldn't even sit on the same row as a white person. So she started to leave the bus and started out the front door. The driver assaulted her, sent her to the hospital because she wasn't using the door that he wanted her to use. She was getting off the bus, but she was assaulted. That case was taken, went through the court system here, and when the case of Rosa Parks was adjudicated, what they did was implement the decision from Sarah Mae Fleming. Sarah Mae Fleming is not the first person to be thrown off of a bus. Elizabeth Jennings in 1950 in New York City was thrown off of the bus because she wouldn't ride in the Jim Crow car. She was in her Sunday finest on the way to church as the pianist and organist at that church. The only thing that saved her, and she had another lady friend with her, they were going to church, is that her father, Thomas Jennings, invented dry cleaning that we still use today and had the finances to hire an attorney. That attorney, by the way, was Chester A. Arthur, who I believe was our 22nd president, and he won that case, won that case. We also have Harriet Tubman, who had her arm broken as she was being thrown off of a streetcar, even though she was a veteran. She led over 750 people to freedom in South Carolina. We sometimes hear about her taking people to Canada. Yes, she did that. But history is so incomplete that it doesn't tell us about the people in the South that went to Mexico. Mexico did not believe in slavery. They're all black towns in both Mexico and America. When we look at the cattle industry in Calgary and Nova Scotia and places like that, many black people were involved in doing that. We had ourselves all over the place, but history has seen fit to exclude us. Sarah Mae Fleming is a name that we should know because she played a vital role. But we don't do that because we don't want to talk about it. It may make us feel uncomfortable, but what are we doing? We're lying to ourselves as if this didn't happen. All you got to do is suck it up. Suck it up. I'm on the air, but my response may not be suitable for the air, so I'll leave it at that. But this is what happens. When we talk about Joy DeGruy Leary, she has a concept of post-traumatic slave syndrome because many things that happened during slavery are still with us. We don't see it. I see things differently than you do. When I turn on the TV and I see the cops beating somebody, choking them, suffocating them to death, it affects me because I don't see that happening with other races, other people. It doesn't happen. And so it has an effect on me that it may not have on you because I am sensitive to it because I've seen it and because it may affect me. I have been stopped, and it has been a scary ordeal. I spent 28 years in law enforcement, and still the prospect of some hotshot coming along wanting to make his mark and doing something stupid is still there. It's still there. But we need to understand that we have contributed, and we have contributed mightily. I'm next going to talk about the Edmondson sisters. And they were in Virginia. In fact, there's been a statue within the last few years unveiled of them in Alexandria, Virginia. They were part of a group of people that attempted to escape. They were on a ship. The ship was caught in bad weather and I think beached on a sandbar or something, and they were returned to slavery. The Edmondson sisters were being sold in the South to work as sex workers. That's what they were intended to be. But people came together and raised money and got their freedom. But they continued to work as abolitionists. They continued this fight. We hear the fight that we have basically done nothing. One of the things that people that I want you to be very proud of is Opal Lee. You may not have heard of Opal Lee, but Opal Lee, not in one stretch, but she basically walked the distance from Texas to Washington, D.C. in support of Juneteenth. Juneteenth. I never heard that until I was 50 years old, and I was in the state of Washington. And I thought, man, these people making themselves up a holiday because I hadn't read it in the book. But as I looked at the significance of that, and I think of this, I think she was in her 70s, and she was so determined to make this a holiday that she held walks. She held walks to make sure that her message was known. Most of us don't want to get out of our house or out of our car because we may feel a little bit uncomfortable. We don't want our kids to learn about our history because they may be uncomfortable. I believe it is better to face fact, face reality, and solve the problem. When we look back at Plessy v. Ferguson and Plessy and Ferguson, if you're not doing something now to make sure that the story is known and that we take corrective action so that it does not persist another 400 years, then we're on the same team. If you don't, I'm going to look at you funny, because there are things that can be done. We don't have to put our kids up against this kind of stuff. No, we don't. And then we do that by understanding who and what we are doing. Women lead the... Just a couple of days ago, I was in Anderson, South Carolina, and Dr. Risha Ree Sancho and the Rotarians had a diversity day. Now, she is important to me because I learned about something that's about 70 miles from where I am right this minute. And what I learned is that her great-great uncle, Corporal Freddie Stowers, the first black to receive the Medal of Honor, was from Sandy Springs down in that area. Yes, it was her mother, and other people that put together a book, and they were invited to the White House and received a posthumous, which means after the person's death, award of the Medal of Honor. There's a statue of him now in Anderson, South Carolina. Yes, he was a man, but it took women in order to bring that story to life. I lived in Spartanburg all my life, and I never heard of the Harlem Hellfighters, at least not in connection with Spartanburg. They were stationed in Spartanburg, and they were one of the most decorated units of all of World War I, yet I never hear about them. And it's the same thing that happens with the women. Don't talk about anything that they've done good, because some others might do good. Is it as evil and as sinister as I'm making it sound? I think it's more so. I think it is more so. Why would we not? And we can't put it in the books now. Why? Because parents' associations are the ones that determine what books go into our schools. And they said, no, I don't want little offspring of mine to be uncomfortable. Let's lie to them. Okay, sounds good. Because we are not involved. We need to be involved in every aspect of decisions that affect our lives. And I don't just mean because of the color of your skin. I don't mean that. There are white people that I admire because they look at things through clear eyes. Clear eyes. If my friend is still on, we're going to go to him in a little bit. And we'll talk about one of our mutual friends, I think, along the way. And we will do that shortly. But I hope that out of the women that we've talked about, and we'll do this again next week, that number again, because next week we're doing it, we're going to do it every week. We won't always have the same topic. But during March, I devote it to women's history. And I want to get your suggestions, not only for women's history, but others. What are places, people, events that we can talk about? One of the people that I enjoy talking about is Barbara Rose Johns. I believe she was 16 years old. What many people don't realize is that Brown v. Board was a conglomeration of five cases folded into one. And the only one that came from a student protest is the one led by Barbara Rose Johns. And I believe it was her uncle that was that took over Tuskegee after Booker T. Washington, I believe his death or whatever. Barbara Rose Johns at 16. We can't say that we're too young. We can't say that we're too old. Look at Opal Lee at 70. Look at Claudette Colvin. And who was Claudette Colvin? Claudette Colvin was arrested about 9 months before Rosa Parks in Montgomery, Alabama, for doing exactly the same thing, arrested for not giving up her seat. And she was 16. Placed on probation. And last year, 2022, at the age of 83, rolling up in a wheelchair to her probation officer because of the failure to get off of the bus in 1956 or whenever it was. She was finally no longer a juvenile delinquent at the age of 82. You talk about fair sentencing, fair distribution of justice. You don't see it, folks. There is something wrong. And that reason is we don't study our history. We're not given the facts. And sometimes we don't know where to start. This is why we have AmazingBlackHistory.com. So we will know a place to start our search. We will know a resource that we can go to. We can become somewhat intimate with the subject because we have videos. We have books where we can dive even deeper. You may find that if you do research, and some of the links lead us to Ancestry, where we can look at some of the people that we have. My wife is a distant relative of Harriet Jacobs. Who is Harriet Jacobs? She lived in Eatington, North Carolina, lived for 7 years in the attic of a home. And North Carolina, this Carolina, has verified that she wrote that book. She was literate. We make it sound like we were not literate. Now, part of the reason for doing that is so that we would not be able to articulate our stories. The reason that we look at the war between the states as being the war between the states, it was a war between two countries. Because one of my ancestors, William Henry Gist, who was the governor of South Carolina, signed the secession order forming the nucleus of a new country that had their own president, vice president, constitution, everything else. And so they took up arms against this country. One of the largest military institutions, Fort Hood, Texas, named after a Confederate, a man that fought against the United States, is being renamed. Yes, we have honored those people that took up arms against the United States in so many ways. And part of that, I think, is to keep certain people from feeling connected to history. History is important. So is the human-to-human connection. I no longer look at white people as being on the opposite side of the table, but I sometimes feel a certain sympathy for them carrying the burden of being afraid that they came and their offspring are slave owners. So what? I can't go back and change that, and neither can you. But we can put an end to that foolishness and make sure that we don't carry this forward for additional generations. That's what we want to do. We want to make sure that we don't carry forth the message of hate that has permeated our country, because we don't know. We don't know. We have people in our own families that are great, that have done tremendous things, but it is difficult to look it up. On some of the posts that I have, you will see a link to Ancestry. You will see a link to a book by Tony Burroughs. Tony Burroughs is black, and he has considered some of the problems that we have in doing genealogical research if you're black. Because if your mother was a slave, your father could be free. The children of that marriage then were owned by the owner of your mother. Slavery followed the path of the mother. And so we have those situations. We have situations where families were split. When we talk about Clara Brown, Clara Brown had four children. And one of them was one was a set of twins, and one was swept away. But her husband was sold one place, her son was sold another, her daughter was sold somewhere else, and they were miles and miles and miles apart and didn't know where each other were. At the age of 60, she had the opportunity to go to Denver. They wouldn't sell her a stagecoach ticket because of the color of her skin. She walked with a wagon train, cooked every morning, cleaned up, and cooked every night. And at the age of 80, she learned that her daughter may be in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And she took the train to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Her daughter was waiting for her on the station, and they embraced and fell into the mud, but they were so happy. And we are told all along that it was okay to sell people because they didn't have emotions. They didn't have feelings. We weren't human. We didn't have souls. That's a bunch of bunk. And when everybody realizes it, we can make changes. But we can't make changes based on lies, omissions. And this is what we have. I'm going to open the mics. I see we have our friend Marshall James on area 860. Marshall, if you have any comments, now is the time. We have another person online that if you have comments, you can do so after Marshall. Marshall, are you there? Marshall, are you
Hello
with us?
There.
How are you,
Hello.
Sir?
Yes, how are you,
Good
Mr. Abercrombie?
Yes, sir, I'm doing well. Hope you are, too.
Fine, we all doing well, all doing well. Yes, went on, got over into church this morning. Wasn't feeling that good. I've been in the bed and all, look like I'm a little on the tired side. But that's all right. God is still good. We still here. Giving us a chance, another chance. Giving us another chance of whatever it is that we hadn't got right, we can get it right.
Now, were you guys able to work in the cemetery? Was it last week?
Yes, supposed to have been yesterday, but due to the fact they were saying it was going to rain, we went ahead and postponed it because we had a lot of people that were going to be coming, and we didn't want them to be there and not be able to do anything, make the trip there out of Greenville and all, and not be able to do anything. So we postponed it, so it'll be up about another date. We're going to do it
okay.
on another day.
And you'll let us know when that is.
Yes, sir, certainly will. Yes, and I was listening to you with the with your comments and all. One other thing that I was thinking about was when they started the welfare mothers. You know, when we come out of the cotton field and start going to the cotton mill, somehow or another, it seemed like we were moving too fast. And then that's when they broke up, the government and all broke it up, that the male could not stay with the woman. Then they put the woman on welfare, and then the man could not be seen around, and they hired people, the government hired people to watch the black women so that there wouldn't be a black man. That was a way to split up the family. Now, that is not right.
No, it is not.
And how in the world could our government do something like that? Like, do anybody have any feelings or anything? And we seem to think it's all right. That's something that's been bothering me a little bit lately, that how that happened. How that happened when the men, man, he couldn't, I can't go over there and they'd be families. He couldn't even go there.
Right.
It was better for the government for him to. Yes, sir, go ahead.
We're doing a variation of that now because people that have been incarcerated can't live in public housing. And that's where their support is. You know, when we look at the case, I can't remember the name, but the man was in prison for 40 years unfairly. And when he got out, all he got was a bus ticket and $10. And what are you going to do with that? I mean, the world has changed in that time. Now, we've got one other caller on from 910. Do you have any comments, sir, ma'am?
I do, and I am a man. Hallelujah. How are you all? Good evening. Good honor to you both. My synopsis on that would be that we as black men and women are the reason and the cause of a lot of things that happen to us. We turn our heads, we turn our eyes, we turn our minds the other way because we're so spirited. And I wouldn't say, we still want white man's approval. And it starts in the church. We're such a church of prosperity, and we're beating our people down. I watched churches all over the world for the last 2 years during COVID, and there was not, you could count the churches on one hand, basically, who were not wanting tablify or givelify. Oh, yeah, we hurting. Your family dying. We losing these. We still need that money. I need you to pay your tithe so God will bless you. So when is the men and women of God, when are we going to bless back the people that have blessed us? And when you said about how only if we get out now and vote, we don't wait a month before the elections, a month before the primaries. We have a whole 2 years. If we start right now, March, what, the 26th? Hopefully, by March the 26th of next year, we'll have some black men who were felons voting. But if they can't see it in us, in the church, because we come together collectively, oh, my Lord, we come together and support the church as needed when it's feasible. I was speaking to a young lady on today, and a dear friend of mine, she said, can you come to my church? I said, can your people pay me for preaching? I said, they owe me from 2 years ago. And it was just a joke because I knew I had already been forewarned when you go there, they don't pay. But I wanted to get God's word, and I got permission from the Lord to exhort to them. And when I went to pass after the offering, I went to pass by the preacher, and I didn't know she had an envelope in her hand. I wasn't trying to take the envelope. I just, brushed up against the envelope. She snatched that envelope, and I was like, and I heard in her spirit, man, this is not for you. I was like, okay. And it blew my mind because in the church, and I know we don't do a lot of politics, but it's everywhere else. Why not? If we're not telling our black, our young, our youth in Sunday school how to present themselves at school, when they are bullied, when they are taught, when there's racism, when, and then we got this new thing, colorism. Colorism has been here since I've been here. When there was a light-skinned mm-hmm. girl and she put her hand up as a little girl and my teacher would not recognize me because at the time my name was Williams, which means I was sitting in the back, yes, I hollered the answer out. I always stayed in the office. I always stayed in trouble. When the little white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl went to the fountain to drink at Wood 5 and 10, yes, I drank out that fountain, and I was banned from coming down. I did not care.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that the same God that gave them the same red blood is the same God that could allow me to drink out of that fountain. I was afraid of Martin Luther King. All I saw was violence and rage. And I would tell my grandma, I said, he can't come to Rockingham. He brings too much violence. All I see is dogs, you know, biting on children and men and women and young girls, and I see water hoses. This was in the city. I couldn't get that revelation. To know
yeah.
that he was fighting.
Let me mention something when you talked about voting.
Uh-huh.
In Maine and Vermont, two of the whitest states around, prisoners in prison can vote because they feel that you have not given up your American citizenship. Now, we can change that.
We are Americans. We're not Japan,
yes.
and God knows we're not China. We're not under a dictator. We are free. And when you've done the crime and you've done the time, you should automatically be able to vote, and it should be your choice. Not a chance, but a choice. And until we impute it in them to tell them, hey, yes, you can vote. Please, that's all I did during the Biden administration. No, I didn't care that much for him. Definitely did not like Mr. Trump, but I did not want another Republican in the White House. I really did not want one at that time, and I didn't want him back in. And so I went out to the neighborhoods where I knew there were felons, where I knew the drug lords, where I knew there were witches and warlocks, and I said, God be for me. And I went out, and I spoke to them, and they were encouraged. I said, you getting welfare, go vote. You're getting food stamps, EBT. Go. That's you have a right to go vote. Register
mm-hmm.
to vote. South Carolina, Richmond County had never seen so many blacks coming out to vote. They wanted to know who, and I said, do not mention my name. Because that would have meant me getting blackballed. Yes. I said, keep it. It'll be our secret. I said, but you keep saying this and that and the other, but until you vote. And when I went back, I made a difference. I made a change in them. They were changed. It was like, wow, it really happened because you voted. But you had to believe. It's a mindset thing. They had to believe in themselves, just like you were saying about the mother seeing her daughter. It was a mindset thing. She was determined, come hell or high water, I'm going to see my baby. Hey, God, I thank you. I'm going to see my child, and I'm going to see her alive. She made a vow to God, and God made a promise to her, because all the promises in the books are what, yay and nay, and they belong to us. Mm. But if we
let me ask you a question at this point, because we're coming
yes,
to you about this. Is it okay if I call you?
Absolutely.
Hello?
No doubt. Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can do that. I'll call you now because we're closing out. And,
don't worry.
I don't have your name, but we'll make it work.
Absolutely.
The program that you're listening to is Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. We do this every Sunday at 4 p.m. I want you to share this site with others because we need to get this word out. We need to get it out. We cannot be like Florida and believe that black people have nothing to contribute to this earth or that we have not. So join us. Let's share this word. And we will be back here again at 4 o'clock next Sunday and every Sunday. With that, my friends, be blessed.
Be blessed.
And I will give you a call. Thank you all.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Be blessed.
God bless.